Welcome to our program. I'm Richard Dugan, and today we have a return visit by one of my favorite guests, Greg Braden. Every time we talk with him, he's written something new, and we're going to find out what he's found out that's new in The Divine Matrix as we walk and talk with Greg Braden, and hopefully you'll understand a little bit more as well here on Let's Talk. And that is what we do here on the program, walk and talk with our guests and help me, help you, and maybe even help the guests to understand the various aspects of what it is that we're all doing here. And it is just a great pleasure to have you back on the program, Greg Braden, to share insights and information on the ongoing investigation into who and what we are, why we're here, and where we're going. And again, thank you for joining us.
Well, Richard, I'm just going to say it's a thrill to hear your voice. I'm absolutely thrilled to be on the program again today. So thank you for inviting me back.
Well, you have been on my program over the course of time as it has sort of metamorphosed into various different focuses. And now it's into the, hey, tell me your story. What is going on with Greg Braden these days? The last time we talked, it had to do with the God Code and the DNA and all of those various elements that have told us that we're all connected, that the DNA has this verbal code, this alphanumeric set of characters that tells us that God is within the body. And it's kind of like where we left off the last time we talked. And so I'd like to have you maybe recap a little bit about some of the research that you've been doing since you were at one time you were working for defense contractors back in the 80s and so forth. And you moved out of that because you saw a need because of these various crises that were happening around the world. And I remember you asking that question, is if there's something that could trigger in the human mind that there's a connection between all of us, you know, would that impact your life?
Sure, Richard. Well, thank you for your kind words to begin with. And this is the 20th year, actually the 22nd year now, that we've done this kind of work on a full-time basis in one form or another. I'm a scientist. I was trained as a scientist, and my last major corporate position was as a senior computer systems designer for Martin Marietta Aerospace during the last years of the Cold War. And as we mentioned in our past programs, it was a very frightening time in the history of our country and of our world, because the superpowers came unthinkably close, Richard, just to pushing the button, as they say in the industry, and unleashing the forces of nuclear weapons on civilian populations in a war that they believed was justified and that many believed was survivable. For me, it was an absolutely insane proposition on the one hand. On the other hand, I was working supporting the industry, developing software for the MX missile by day. And in the evenings, I have always been powerfully drawn, compelled, if you will, to research the wisdom of our past, the texts, the traditions that tell us in a very different language about who we are in this universe and how the universe works, how we function, our role in creation, in the hopes that maybe somewhere in that ancient wisdom we could find the principles that would help us to transcend our differences that lead to the wars and the kinds of things we're seeing happening in our world now and in the first years of the 21st century. And if we could find those subtly yet powerful principles and share them in a way that was meaningful, not just to New Age listeners or not just to spiritually minded people living off the grid in remote parts of North America, not just to people working in corporations or students, but to everyone. We could find a truly universal principle that would have to speak to everyone. And through that principle, my hope and my prayer has always been and continues to be that somehow we can find a way to bridge that chasm that many people perceive, the differences that separate us from one another, and learn that we're a family, that this world is our home, and that we collectively, Richard, are facing the greatest challenges in recorded human history. Challenges of survival, and that we're going to need everything that we can bring together to the table to meet those challenges, I believe, if we're going to survive another 100 years. So all of our work, as different as the individual books may appear from one another, they all fall under that collective umbrella of empowering us with new ways to see ourselves in the world and hopefully help us to become better people and create a better world. So the new book, The Divine Matrix, is the latest in those offerings.
Well, I was, when I saw the title and I was kind of looking over some of the information, the mind went to, of course, you know, you've heard of the movie The Matrix, and
sure.
then it was reloaded. Well, now it's divine. tell me a little bit about that aspect, and does it fall along those same lines? Not so much, obviously, of the movie, but at least of the concept that the reality that we think is real, that our, let's say, our personalities, our egos, observe in our day-to-day world, we say that is real. But yet in the reality of our discussions that we've had, as well as on the soul level, individuals having that soul, this world isn't really real. And even in science, it tells us that nothing here, even though it appears to be solid and has shape and mass and form, there's really nothing there.
Well, Richard, I don't know if I could say it any better than you just said it. So that's the end of the interview, and
thank you very much for calling.
So what the interesting thing, just for listeners who are not familiar with any of this work, I'm just going to take about a half step back. We'll lay a little foundation, and then I'll give a very long answer to the very brief question that you just asked me. What this work is based upon, the book The Divine Matrix, Western science and now Western scientists have only arrived at an understanding in the language of science today. They've just arrived at the place where many ancient and indigenous traditions have always begun. And that is with the understanding and the fact, and it is now an accepted fact, that we are bathed in a field of intelligent energy, that there is what is called a non-conventional field of energy. It doesn't work like electricity or broadcast radio or television waves. And that's one of the reasons why it's taken so long to validate it by scientists, because we simply don't have the equipment designed to detect this kind of energy on the one hand. On the other hand, it now has been detected. It's taken almost 400 years to do it in the language of science. Science is about 400 years old. So Western science now has arrived at this understanding. They're saying, okay, there's a field of energy out there. What do we do with it? And this is so interesting to me, because the ancient and the indigenous traditions, some of them go back over 5, 6, in the case of the Hindu Vedas, 7,000 years ago. They begin with this understanding. It's a given. They say, of course, everything is connected. We are part of all. We are part of, not a part of, all that we see. And through that connection, they spent their time, the ancients and the indigenous people spent their time developing the understandings and the techniques of how we apply that connection in our lives. So I was trained as a scientist, and to me it made perfect sense to take these two very different ways of knowing, the science that tells us the nuts and bolts and the mechanism of why things are the way they are, and the ancient principles that tell us how to apply those understandings in our lives, to marry those together into a greater wisdom than either of them are individually. And in that wisdom, maybe we will find the tools that will help us to address the great challenges of our time, challenges that scientists now tell us are unprecedented in human history. So this field is now being accepted, Richard. Scientists acknowledge that it's there. It's so new, the discovery of it is so new, that there are still a number of different names that are used to describe the field. A quantum physicist, for example, may call this field the quantum hologram. Former Apollo astronaut Edgar Mitchell, I've had the honor of sharing the stage conferences with him a number of times, he calls this field nature's mind. Stephen Hawking calls it the mind of God. In 1944, the man that many people believe is the father of quantum theory, his name was Max Planck, he actually called this field the matrix. And what he said was that the world that we see, the stuff that our world is made of, doesn't really exist the way we think it exists. He said, underlying all physical matter, he said, is the existence, and this is a quote, of what he called a conscious and intelligent mind. He said this mind is the matrix of all matter. And when he coined that term, that set into motion a way of thinking that continues today. And the movie series, The Matrix, was actually based upon these statements and the studies from Max Planck back in the 1940s. So of all the names we can give this field, this matrix, now this divine matrix, we know that the field is there. And I know that many of our listeners on this broadcast and the people we talk to all over the world, when you say to someone that everything is connected, it's not uncommon to see people either roll their eyes or their eyes just kind of glaze over, because we've heard it so many times on the one hand, and on the other hand, we've seen such little application of it in our world. People say, if it's the if then, they say, if this field's really there, then why do all these things happen? If this field's really there, why are we still having wars? Why can't we create peace in our world? If this field is really there, why can't we heal the diseases that medicine isn't able to heal? And the answer is we can. And to do so, we've got to understand the language that speaks to this field in a way that the field recognizes. We've got to understand the language that the divine matrix, that is meaningful to the divine matrix in our lives. So one of the reasons this book is a little different and our work may be a little different is because we're identifying this field as more than simply a connection between all things. The experiments, the scientific experiments have shown that this field fulfills three fundamental roles in the universe and in our lives. Number one, this field is the container for the universe. From the studies, what the studies have shown, what scientists believe, is everything that happens in the universe is happening within the context of this field. There's nothing beyond this field as far as they know. And because of that, and because we're part of everything that is happening, it means that we have access. We're made of the same stuff. We have direct access to the events of our lives, everything from the healing in our bodies to the abundance in our checkbook, to the quality of our relationships, our careers, to the peace between nations. As different as those things sound from one another, they're all linked through the common fabric of this divine matrix. That's number one. Number two, this field is the bridge or the conduit between our inner experiences, excuse me, of thought, feeling, emotion, belief, and prayer, and the outer experiences of our everyday world. If we ever wonder how our prayers or how our beliefs can possibly have an effect on the physical world beyond our bodies, the divine matrix is the answer to that question. It literally is the conduit that carries those inner experiences into the world beyond us. And then number three, this divine matrix also behaves as a mirror. It's like the stuff that the world is made of all around us, the rocks, trees, the plants, careers, buildings, corporations, everything in the world around us literally is the quantum mirror of what we individually and collectively claim to be true and believe and create in our hearts, our minds, and our imaginations. Now, any one of those three things could be a whole one-hour program unto itself. Those are huge statements. The matrix is a container for the universe. It's a bridge between our inner and our outer worlds, and it's a mirror for all of our experiences. But when we pull all those together, it says that we're much more than simply connected, that we literally are living in a world that's nothing more and nothing less than the mirror of what we agree to believe and consent to in our world. And this ties back to your original question, Richard, about how real the world is. There are many realities, apparently, that exist. This is what physicists now suggest. And every one of those realities is as real as we choose and claim it to be in our beliefs.
Well, I know as I was growing up, I used to think that my experience of living was so unique that everyone else was here for, the only way I could put it was, is here for my benefit or entertainment or what have you. And in other words, this was my show. But then I began to realize that, yes, that is true. And for every individual on the planet, that is still also true for them.
It is, and it's a very different way. I mean, I'll just say I was trained as a scientist, Richard, and from the old ways of looking at things and the way science, the language of science, has viewed our world for the last 400 years or so, this is a very different way in our culture of looking at the way the world works. However, it was very much a part of our spiritual and religious traditions, the Judeo-Christian tradition, prior to the time those traditions changed, early in the 4th century, in the year 325 A.D., when tremendous amounts of information were edited right out of our accepted canon, the accepted biblical texts, for both the Jewish and the Christian traditions. We lost the words that tell us of the things we're speaking about now. We lost the words that validate to our logical minds that we're part of all that we see. And at the same time, I think all of our listeners have always felt in their deepest beliefs, in their heart of hearts, that there's much more to us than we've ever acknowledged or accepted, that we all have powers, potentials within us that are yet to be untapped.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we go to other cultures, they not only have kept the same beliefs, but they are accepted as part of their outward culture, and they live from that perspective. So for over 20 years, I have devoted huge amounts of our time to exploring some of the most remote and ancient, isolated, pristine places remaining on the earth today where this knowledge has been kept. My thinking has been that if we could find places least disturbed by Western civilization, we're going to find this kind of information more intact. And it's not uncommon to find that information kept in places like monasteries. So in the monasteries of Bolivia, in the Andes Mountains of Bolivia and Peru, in the highlands of central China and Tibet, the monasteries in the mountains of Egypt on the Sinai Peninsula, all through the American desert Southwest and the indigenous cultures, we find the remnants of this wisdom practiced in ways that to the Western mind don't make sense. So we think these are primitive cultures. The reason that they don't make sense is because there's a disconnect. These cultures are seeing this field at work and our role in the field in everyday life. And to the average Westerner trained in the language of science, that field simply has not even been acknowledged until just within the last few years. So.
It is something that more and more of us are becoming exposed to through various different means, whether it's through your materials, your books, especially the latest one, The Divine Matrix, which is, of course, available through gregbraden.com. That's GREGGBRANDE.com. I'm sure Amazon.com, your local bookstores and other outlets as well, getting a copy of that and reading through that. And I remember when I going back to the previous work of the God Code, started reading that, I had to go back and look over some of the material several times because it kind of ran over my head. So what I'm wondering is, in the Divine Matrix, because you are a scientist, I mean, that's, you come from that logical background, you come from that way of thinking. How has it been at all difficult for the layman to understand and grasp these terms?
Absolutely not, Richard. It's a good question. And first, I'm just going to acknowledge some of our work. The book, The God Code, it was released in 2004 as a result of over 20 years of research looking for that unifying principle.
Mm-hmm.
And by following the clues in 5,000-year-old texts, we literally, this isn't a metaphor, it's not figurative, we were literally able to translate the first layer of a code within the DNA of all life into the literal letters of alphabets that you read like you read the pages on a book.
Mm-hmm.
For credibility, that book was a little technical, a little wordy. It was received very well. And we are, you will be seeing the results of the next step of that research in the near future.
I look forward to that.
That will take us even deeper. The Divine Matrix also is over 20 years in the making, and it was written for a broad general audience. It shot right. It was released in January, shot to the top of the charts in the end of January and was on the New York Times bestseller list the last week in January. And the reason I'm sharing that now, I'm excited about it, and it tells me, Richard, that we have reached beyond the traditional support base that would normally be drawn to this work into a larger audience who has found meaning and is interested in the work. And it also says that we're beginning to find the language where we can bridge these very technical ideas in non-technical terms with a mainstream audience in a way that makes sense and, you know, is meaningful in their lives. So this book is much more accessible. My mom read this book in about 4 hours. She had a lot of questions after she read it. But the book is actually, it's divided into three parts. So the first part is the mystery of this field, how we know it's there. The second part is probably the most technical, although it's not highly technical, describing the experiments that have led scientists to understanding. And the third part of the book is like a completely separate book. They're the case histories and true life accounts in people's lives of how this field has played out in real time, real ways, how their beliefs have been mirrored back to them in their relationships, in their careers, in their health, in their healing, or the lack of all those things. So between those three different ways of looking at the field, I think people have found a way to, or maybe I've found a way to relate to people's lives in a way that almost everyone can find something they identify with.
Now, this is going to be kind of a strange question, but has there been anything of a mundane nature that you have found in this research that says, oh, well, yeah, I knew that, no big deal? And on the converse, what has been the most astounding or mind-rattling for you anyway, mind-rattling
Sure.
piece of information that you've come across Sure. through these 20 plus some odd years of study?
Well, in terms of mundane for me personally, the way the material is unfolding and what science now is acknowledging is the way that I've always believed in my life anyway. I've never made the distinction between science and spirituality, and I was actually surprised. I was a little naive when I found myself in the corporations. While people don't talk about it every day, I just kind of thought everybody believed the same way. And my thinking was that when we study science, we understand the world around us, and when we do that, ultimately we understand the greater power, although we don't talk about it every day at the water cooler.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found was nothing could be further from the truth, that there was a belief that science and spirituality were mutually exclusive. You either have to identify with one or the other. And if you're working in a corporation using scientific technology, sometimes they don't want to hear you talking about your spiritual beliefs.
Yeah, exactly.
So for me, I was a little surprised to find that, but the book is aligned, certainly, with what I've always felt and believed to be true, but where the mundane aspect comes in. We've been on every continent of the Earth with the exception of Antarctica. We haven't done any programs in Antarctica. But not every country, but every continent of the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And everywhere where I share this information, one of the reasons it's so well received is because people nod their heads and they say, you know, I've always believed that, or I've always felt that was true, but I couldn't put it into words, or the words that I used to describe it, people around me didn't accept it, they didn't believe. So there is that mundane aspect. People go, yeah, you know, and now that we know science that tells why things are the way they are, it helps us to hone, that's my word, but it helps us to hone our beliefs and to work with what is true and maybe let some of the other kind of fringe ideas go by the wayside that maybe aren't so true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me personally, I research every book thoroughly. They're not peer-reviewed by a panel of experts can sometimes take six, seven, 8 years to get a book through a peer review process. Although there are white papers on our materials that we will submit to the journals for peer review, I wanted to carry this information into the mainstream as quickly as possible because the challenges we're faced today with problems we've got to start dealing with, and we can't deal with them using traditional tools. So that's why I've taken these to the mainstream. And in the research, I have found some things that were fascinating to me. And most of those, Richard, were around the experiment exploring time and what time is and how we relate to time in our lives. The experiment's showing that in this divine matrix, time doesn't work quite the way we think it works. And what the experiments are actually showing is that under laboratory conditions, and some of these experiments were done at Princeton University by Professor John Wheeler, who was a colleague of Albert Einstein's, and is still alive today, and is still working and publishing today. And I talk about these in the book, Wheeler's experiments, where they could take the quantum particles, the stuff our world is made of, they could isolate those particles, know everything there is to know about the properties of those particles in a moment in time, and then they could take those particles into from 5 minutes ago into the present of now. So they could take a particle through time, and in now they could change the qualities of that particle, and what they found was that it actually changed the particles back in time before this particle ever began its journey through those 5 minutes. In other words, they found that the changes they made in the present moment affected things that had already happened in the past.
And
that's fascinating to me, because if our bodies and the universe and the world and the events around us are made of those quantum particles, and those particles are not limited in space and time, then the question is, are we limited in space and time? And if we are, is it only because we believe we're limited? Or can we make changes in the present? In other words, can our forgiveness in this moment change the things that may have hurt us in the past or led to the hurt of our past? And I explore that a little bit in the book, and we do it more in the live programs. But you ask about what it was that fascinated me. That was one of the things that really the implications of, they're called delayed choice experiments for listeners that would like to Google these and find out more about them. They're highly, highly technically reported in most cases. But if we can get through all the math and technical stuff, the bottom line of what they're saying is very empowering and just very, very cool.
Well, and it actually dovetails into my next question.
See how well the divine matrix works?
Well, now I've got a question for you, and
okay,
see where we go with this. If that that being said, how does the awareness on the part of an individual, a group, or the masses to this knowledge, whether it be specifically of that particle and just the choices we make from moment one to moment five, change that particle, how does the awareness of this dynamic, this paradigm, if you will, impact the matrix? And is there a predestined aspect to the matrix? Is there a final destination? Is there a journey that we're taking through this matrix? Or is it, is it random? Do our lives have meaning in the context of the matrix? Or is it just all just random particles and they change and we emote and we feel and we believe and we come across these great works and, oh, aha, and then we move forward and then we go right back to where we were? And
well, Richard, you just asked me five questions.
I know. It's terrible.
So,
but
so we've got some time to explore this. It's a fascinating topic.
But do you see what I'm asking there?
I understand perfectly. It's a very good question. And as esoteric and nebulous as the question may appear at first blush, once we begin to talk about the possibilities, and then we realize that all the possibilities we're talking about have all already happened and been observed under laboratory conditions. Scientists have already observed all of the miraculous possibilities that we're talking about in the stuff the world is made of. Then all of a sudden we have to start asking deeper questions. So let me just begin by saying, for almost 100 years now, scientists have done their very best to convince us that we are all made out of invisible, very, very tiny, obviously invisible units of energy called quanta. And this is where the science of quantum physics comes from. And these very small particles of energy or vibration, they're particles of light, are called photons. So photons are the essence of everything that that we're experiencing in our bodies or our world. We're all made out of photons. And other quantum particles. And what has happened now that we have the equipment to see how these particles behave, scientists have found, is that the stuff we're made of and the stuff our universe is made of can do seemingly miraculous things. Quantum particles, for example, they can be visible particles of matter, or the energy can still be there and simply be invisible. Quantum particles can be in one place, or they can be in two places at the same time, or they can be in many places at the same time. And no matter where they are, when something happens to one of them, the others act as if they're having the same experience, even though they're separated by great distances. So they're always connected. Quantum particles are always connected. Quantum particles can communicate with themselves in the past in terms of things that have already happened. So we've got to ask ourselves, if quantum particles, if the stuff that we're made of can do these things, can we do these things as well? And in the book, I actually give case histories of individuals who have done precisely those different seemingly miraculous things. People who have had experiences of appearing or disappearing, matter becoming visible or invisible, tumors in the bodies of living people. A tumor is a visible expression of the matter. And we actually have been able to document tumors disappearing, so they become invisible. The energy is still there. It's just a different expression. And we share these videos in the workshop so people can actually see how these things work. So if quantum particles can do these seemingly miraculous things, and we're made of those particles, can we do them? And the answer is yes, because people have been documented over time doing all of these things. Then the question becomes, if some people can do it, why can't everyone do it? And what is it that stands between us and the limitations that we think we experience and the freedom that those particles suggest that we may experience? And that all comes down to a very exciting topic called belief.
Yes.
And the power that belief has in our lives. Mm-hmm. So the bottom line to that part of our question is, it appears that we live our lives based in what we believe about ourselves and our world. I think most people will agree with that. More often than not, those beliefs come from what history and religion and science and culture and families and other people tell us. So my question was, what if they're wrong? What if the information that we base our beliefs upon, our capabilities and our limits, what if that information is based in a false understanding? Are we suffering needlessly? Are we living lives in lack and with limitation that were actually intended to be lived with a tremendous freedom? And that conversation, the answer appears to be yes, because as people change their beliefs, their limitations change as well. And that all comes down now to the question that you were asking about whether or not these things are predestined in our lives. You know, what is this reality all about? And it's fascinating. There's so many different ways that we can talk about this. But what scientists have found is all of the different theories, and they are only theories because no one knows for certain the answer to how our universe works. But the theories all suggest, they're different theories, but they have common themes that unite the theories. And the common theme now is that there appears to be this quantum soup of possibilities and potential where everything that we could ever imagine exists in this soup of possibilities. All the lightest of the light, the darkest of the dark, the greatest wars and the greatest times of peace, the personal healing and the personal suffering. Everything we could imagine already exists as a possibility in this soup of potential. And it is through the language that we call belief, where we lock in one of those possibilities. We lock it in as a potential. And through the power that we create in our bodies, the electrical and magnetic forces in our thoughts and our emotions, biological oscillators in our heart, we literally breathe life. We lock a possibility, we seize that possibility, and we breathe life into it, and it becomes what's real in our world. In other words, it's what emerges from the substrate of this divine matrix to become real in our world. And as our beliefs change, that reality changes as well. We've seen this documented with disease, where certain kinds of beliefs will create the diseases in the physical body. The biology responds to the beliefs. And as the beliefs change, then the biology responds as well, and tumors will disappear, or rashes and bodies covered with rashes will change in the period of, you know, 2 or 3 minutes.
Now, this is aside from any, this is aside from breaking down into categories, okay, this is males versus females, whites versus blacks, old versus young, and so forth. This is across the board, doesn't matter who the human is.
It appears to be a universal. Power,
mm-hmm.
or a gift, depending on how we choose to see it, mm-hmm. that we are all born with. From the moment we take our first breath in this world, we are given the power to create the conditions in our bodies and our world that mirror our deepest experiences of imagination and heart experience, both of love and fear.
You know, it brings to mind all of the miracles and so forth of say Jesus, and growing up and working in a religious radio station for 15 years, hearing all of the stories and so forth, and reading about them as well, and how extraordinary everybody refers to them as. And I've always told people, says, you know what, I'll bet you he didn't think they were extraordinary because it was just what he did.
Well, they're only miracles until we understand the mechanism, until we understand that something we do in our lives changes us, changes the chemistry in our bodies, inside of us, and those changes extend on the quantum level beyond our bodies into the world around us and change our physical world. And this is precisely, this isn't wishful thinking, this is what the experiments are showing. The experiments show that human DNA directly affects the quantum stuff our world is made of. That's one series of experiments. Another series shows that changing the way we feel and believe in our bodies changes the DNA that's changing the world around us. And when we put those kinds of experiments together, we begin to see that precisely what our most cherished spiritual traditions are saying to us, that we can choose to assume a quality of belief or feeling or emotion inside of us. And when we do that, not only does it change us, but it changes the world around us. But one of the interesting things, now you're referencing the great master, the great teacher, Jesus of Nazareth. And one of the fascinating things to me about we would call what he demonstrated miraculous experiences because of our disconnect, because we don't understand. We're only beginning to understand the role this divine matrix plays in our lives. And to him, it was the way things are. It's a technology.
Mm-hmm.
It's the way when we see the healings in the medicineless hospitals in Beijing, China, it's not like a one-time miracle. It's a technology. They know that when they can create this experience in their bodies, the world conforms. But what's interesting is even Jesus said, and I believe it's in the Gospel of Thomas, the Lost Gospel of Thomas, found in the Nag Hammadi Library, that he couldn't do those things in his own village. He couldn't do them around people who had known him and seen him develop from the time he was born as a child, and see him in all of the learning processes that he went through, because in their mind they held him to the vision of his growth and his learning. They didn't see him as a perfectly, miraculously arrived master. They saw him as someone with a learning curve, and they held him to that. They said, you know, you haven't always been able to do these things. So he couldn't do those miracles around the people that had known him all of his life.
So their belief, or lack thereof, had an effect on his ability to perform these miracles.
I think it's a statement about the power that we all have to hold others in their highest light. Because when we hold people in our mind to their greatest failures, or to their most painful experience, the mistakes they've made in their lives, and we continue to see them that way, in the field, there's a tendency for them to conform to seeing them that way. However, if he walked into a village of people who had never seen him growing up, never seen his learning process, his learning curve, he walked in as a fully evolved, fully formed, fully developed master, and he said, look into my eyes. And if I tell you, when I tell you that you're healed, look into my eyes and believe in your body that you have the same power that I have. They had no reason to see him in any other way. And I think there's something to be said about what that means in our lives, because we have a tendency to hold people to their low points. You know, people can be the greatest singers, the greatest artists, the greatest engineers, the greatest astronauts, and in the presence of all of their achievements, their biggest mistake is often what stays in our minds, and that's the way we see them, and hold them to that, and they have a tendency, we all have a tendency to kind of live up to those expectations. There's a tribe in Africa that uses this principle very powerfully, Richard, and when someone in this tribe commits a crime, any crime, whether it's theft or whether it's murder or whatever it is, the entire tribe will come out and they will form a circle around the person that's committed the crime. And what they'll begin is a process that lasts for days. They will not let this person leave that circle. And for days, what they will do is inundate that person with the shouts of all of the accomplishments and all of the good and all of the achievements that person has ever done in their lives. They're not chastising them for the mistake. They are reminding them of their potential. And it doesn't last like just for a few minutes. I mean, this goes on for days and days, like, you know, 3 or 4 days. And ultimately, that person is so overwhelmed by the good memories that everyone has of him or her. And to them, that is how they address. That's the punishment. They say, in the presence of all this good, how could you ever even think about doing something like this again? And it seems to work. And, you know, these are all little anecdotes and sidelines for what this field means in our lives. I want to get back, because you asked me 6 questions.
Go ahead.
And 3,000 years ago, for over 3,000 years now, scholars of a very powerful book called the Torah, the original Hebrew Bible, the first 5 books of the Western Christian Bible, in its original form, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, the Torah scholars have always believed and always stated that the Torah is much more than the outward words and the language that you read with your eyes, that there are other ways of reading the Torah. It was in the 1990s that some of the most high-powered mathematicians on this planet had access to some of the most high-powered computers on this planet. So rather than exploring the Torah as a manual operation very tediously, they let the computer do the work. And what they began to find is there is something in the Torah that there's much more than meets the naked eye than reading the words on the page, that the Torah literally appears to be a map of precisely what we're talking about. The Torah appears to be a map of all possibilities that can exist in this quantum potential. All of the possibilities of war, all the possibilities of peace, every human's name that's ever been entered into the Torah is in the Torah and the events of their lives. It's beyond coincidence. Statistically, it's impossible for this to happen. The odds are some outrageous number. And what the scholars have always said is the Torah is a 3,000-year-old map of all that has ever been, all that is, and all that will ever be until the end of time. Whenever we think the end of time is, a lot of people looking at the Mayan calendar and some of the others believe that it may happen within our lifetime. Not the end of the world, just the end of the kind of reality that we know today. But the key is, and the reason I'm mentioning this is because it appears that somehow 3,000 years ago, a map of all of those potentials was given to the people of this world. If we have the wisdom to recognize it, it was a mathematical map coded in this very mysterious language. And this has helped to bridge. The Israeli government takes this map very, very seriously because this map has been so accurate. It told the exact day and the time of day that the Iraqis would launch the Scud missiles into Israel during the first Gulf War. They knew that that was a possibility. It actually told the day and the time that Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin would be assassinated, and even gave the name of the man that would assassinate him.
But you used a key word there, possibility. It doesn't mean it's a given, but...
Well, this is going to tie all this together.
Okay.
It's a map. We mentioned earlier that Western physicists now believe that everything that could ever be exists as a possibility in this soup of potential, quantum soup of potential, and that our beliefs reach into that soup and grab one of those possibilities in our imagination. We lock it into our imagination. And through the power of human emotion, we crystallize that possibility. We make it real. We make it manifest. We breathe life into it. Whether it's the possibility of a disease in our body. If we're always thinking about disease and we've got a big fear of that disease, the thinking of it locks it in, and the big fear draws it from that possibility into the reality of our world. And the flip side works as well. If we're always feeling and seeing ourselves as perfectly healed, or our friends or our relatives as perfectly healed, fully enabled, fully capacitated, youthful, vital beings, and we can love that possibility, that state of love, we reach into the soup and we pull that possibility out and crystallize it and make it real in our lives. And that is precisely what happened on this video, that we see a miraculous healing of a woman's cancer. We look into her body through ultrasound. We can see the tumor. It's there. 2 minutes and 40 seconds later, it's no longer there with no physical, no surgical procedures. And the three practitioners who facilitate this healing have done so only by feeling the feeling as if the woman is already healed, and that's all they do. And this is the way this technology works in these other cultures. So the belief is what locks in those possibilities, and what the mathematicians now believe, and what the Torah scholars have always said, is that every possibility you can ever imagine is already mapped out for us in this divine matrix. That we were given that gift, and that it's up to us to choose individually in our personal lives and together in our collective lives which of those possibilities becomes the reality of our personal finances, our personal health, our personal relationships, and our collective peace between nations. But the interesting thing is that, and this is called the Bible Code for people that may have heard of it, it is controversial.
Mm-hmm.
There are some people that say it does not exist. I've spent quite a bit of time these last 15 years working with it and studying it. And while I can say I don't understand it fully, what I can say is that the Torah demonstrates these codes in a way that no other written body of information does. If you take a book like Moby Dick or The Divine Matrix or, you know, the telephone book, you know, statistically, you'd think if you work with it long enough, you're going to get some meaningful information out of it. What's happening in the Torah defies those statistical odds astronomically. And the computers now, while the computers have not been able to fully construct the entire map, it has done such a phenomenal job of past events with great specificity. These aren't like the Nostradamus kinds of predictions.
Mm-hmm.
In the Bible Code, we find the dates that World War I and World War II began, what countries entered on what dates, who was the leaders of the countries on those dates, very specific. And they're not all bad things. There are dates in there about royal marriages. About it's just a map of all possibilities. And when we look at that map, there are very frightening possibilities for our future.
Yeah.
Everything from global war and atomic holocaust to asteroids striking the Earth. So a lot of people will focus on those. The key is there are only possibilities. None of them need happen. And where we're going with all this, and to go back to some of your original questions, in this divine matrix, it appears that everything is possible, that the building blocks for every possibility already exist. And our role is to seek out the beauty and the health, the vitality, the longevity, the love, the compassion, the cooperation, to seek those things out in our lives and bring those possibilities to fruition, to life in our world, and where we see that other things have already happened, war, famine, suffering, disease, to know that those are only possibilities that have been invited into this world, and that just as easily as they have arrived, that other possibilities can replace them. And that's subtle, but it's different than judging. When we judge the war and the suffering, when we become angry and fearful and we hate those things, that's the very energy that locks it in.
Yeah.
If this divine matrix, if the Torah, if belief, if all of these things work the way it appears that they work.
And I guess therein lies a critical key, and that is that we choose those possibilities consciously, because it seems to me right now most people are not even aware of this map, and it would take them a while to maybe comprehend it, but they are choosing certain possibilities, but they're not doing it on a conscious level.
Well, most people aren't aware that we even have a choice.
Yeah, well, exactly.
That's where this material comes into play. The Divine Matrix is written in very easy language. It says all possibilities exist. It says that there's a language within us that can choose those possibilities and make them real in our lives. It shows the science. We're made of quantum particles. Quantum particles are free of the laws of physics and biology as we understand those laws today. They may be subject to some laws, but they're not subject to the laws that we know today.
Yeah.
So if the stuff we're made of has that freedom, then the question is, are those particles, are they really showing us our limits, or are they showing us the possibilities that await for us when our beliefs allow us to transcend those limits? And I think that's what we're finding today. So people listening to this are saying, you know, this sounds very complex, sounds like a lot, you know, Bible codes, Torah codes, divine matrix, quantum holograms. The beauty is we don't have to know any of this.
Uh-huh.
Intuitively, we already know we are simply invited to live and become in our everyday lives the things that we'd like to see in the world.
And the fascinating thing for me, too, is, and this kind of goes back to my religious broadcasting experience, and they used to talk about how once you've been exposed to the word, you can never go back. And I say the same thing about this and any other information we bring about on this program. Once you've heard it, you can't unhear it. It's in there. You can ignore it for a long, long time, but eventually something will come along to spark that remembrance of, you know, I heard that somewhere before, and I rejected it then, but, you know, this person is saying something that brings that back, and it's sort of rings true, and they begin consciously to understand it.
Sure. You know, a lot of people, and where the connection may be, I am probably one of the few people on the face of the earth that has not seen the movie or read the book called The Secret.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't get out much. We go do our programs, come home, and write the book. So I haven't seen it, although a lot of people have approached me and talked to me about it. So I cannot speak to it directly, but what I can say is that people have said that this sounds like the nuts and bolts that make The Secret possible to the degree that it is, and that it's much more than material wealth and
yes.
material abundance.
Yes.
And for so many people, apparently the way The Secret was put together to really draw a broad general audience, it's focused on material wealth and abundance, although the implications are that it goes much, much deeper.
it doesn't do a whole lot of good to have all the material abundance if you don't have something going on in the inside.
Well,
and that's the
precisely.
Real key is what we've been talking about. And I, as someone who has only now been exposed to in great depth in this past 55 minutes of this program to the Divine Matrix, who has seen the movie The Secret, I would say that you don't need to see the movie. You don't need to read the book, Greg. You have codified it in the context of all of the work that you've been doing, and that this all, it's all interconnected. It is, as you've already stated, all of this stuff is connected. There is no separation.
Well, thank you for your kind words. I'd like to see it because a lot of my friends are in it.
Well,
You know, where this all becomes very relevant, in 2003, the lay journal Scientific American came out with a special issue, Richard. It was called Crossroads for Planet Earth. And in this special issue, they identified a number of scenarios. Any one of the scenarios, if it were to actually happen, would bring an end to civilization as we know it, and very possibly to an end to life as we know it on our world today. And the interesting thing was that all of the scenarios are actually happening right now. So while any one of them is dangerous, they're all happening. One of them was the possibility of isolated conflicts merging into global conflicts and global war. Another one was nuclear proliferation. Another one was abrupt climate change. Another one were the new viruses that doctors don't know what to do with, sweeping the earth and the implications. Famine, starvation, all those things, they're all happening right now. And the essence of this publication and the urgency, they said, if we don't figure this out in the next 5 to 10 years, nothing else is going to make any difference. And I think we would do well to listen to that, because we're faced with problems we've never been faced with before. We've got to think about ourselves and our world in a way that we've never done before. The fact that this divine matrix exists, and that we are empowered within this field to make a difference in our bodies and the world around us, I think is going to be the keystone to how we deal with what it is we're dealing with over these next few years. And that's why I believe everyone learns differently. So whether you're looking at The Secret, or you're looking at Harry Potter, or you're reading The Divine Matrix, or you're reading the Lost Gospels of Thomas, they're all saying there's a power within us, and everyone identifies with it in their own way. And I think that's the good news of what we're awakening to as a species.
Well, as I've stated, the whole premise of this program is to demystify the fork in the road, so that if you want to go to the left, it's there for you to go. You don't have to. Nobody's going to force you. But at least now you know it's there. And if you don't like what's happening in the circle that you keep going around in, and nothing seems to be changing, well, what the heck? Give it a shot. Go to the left and see what happens.
Well, or we can say it this way. We can say that these principles work so well for people whose lives seem to be really tough, who seem to always be in lack, go from paycheck to paycheck, have a lot of health challenges, people that betray their friendship and violate their trust. There's a very good possibility that the field works so well that all of those are showing us, because we all have these experiences, they're showing us the core of some of our deepest, sometimes unconscious beliefs. And as we become aware through the world around us of what those beliefs are within us, and we change those beliefs, it is absolutely mind-boggling how quickly the world will change as well. And that is one of the ways we know this field works and how well it works.
Mm-hmm. Well, Greg Braden, I want to thank you for joining us on the program, and I do look forward to having you back for 5 and 10 and 20 more programs over the course of time as you continue to the research and as we continue to learn and educate ourselves and find new choices and new ways of thinking and believing and trying some of those possibilities that are going to raise us up instead of drag us down as a civilization, as beings as well. And I want to let our listeners know you can go to gregbraden.com. That's GREGGBRANDE.
BRANDEN.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
DEN.com. And go there. You can find out all this information regarding the Divine Matrix, the God Code, and earlier works, as well as find out about the lectures and seminars and workshops. And I thank you again. And you you have, and please join us again.
Richard, thanks for being such a gracious host. I'm going to say God bless you and all of our listeners. Take good care.